We live in a knowledge-based, information-based society. Successful people are simply those who know more than their competitors. One of your most important responsibilities is keeping up with your field, staying ahead of the pack by continually taking in more information. The amount of knowledge in every field is at least doubling every 7 years. That means that you must double your knowledge every 7 years just to stay even. The basic rule is, to earn more, you must learn more. Or to put it another way, you are earning all that you possibly can today with what you now know. You need to become an information-gathering person to achieve and maintain excellence. If you want to be the best, you must pay the price in terms of reading, listening, learning, and growing. You have gone as far as you can with what you now know. If you want to go any further than you are now, you can only do it by taking in and applying new information. One new idea or piece of information can change the direction of your life. For instance, the IBM scientists who won the Nobel Prize in superconductivity had been working on it for years at the laboratories in Switzerland and had finally given up. They'd finally reached an impasse and they stopped their research. One of the scientists took a break and went down to the company library. While he was there, he was reading through a French journal on applied ceramics, and he came across an article explaining some experiments that had been done in conductivity with ceramics, and he realized that this was the key they were looking for. The article and the information were from a completely different source than the sources they had been working on, but they took the information back up to the laboratory, they discovered superconductivity, they were awarded the Nobel Prize, and they will now go down in history as two of the most important scientists of the 20th century. Just one piece of information, by keeping their minds open and by continually reading and gathering information from different sources. In fact, every change in the direction of our lives is caused by taking in new information. People who regularly expose themselves to new ideas tend to move ahead more rapidly than those who do not. Here are some ways for you to keep up with what's going on. Number one, top of the list, read 1 hour per day in your chosen field. This alone will make you an expert in 3 to 5 years. It will make you a national authority in 5 years. It will make you an international authority in 7 years. Earl Nightingale first discussed this in his program Lead the Field many years ago, and I have met people all over the United States who took that one single idea and are now leaders in their fields, making 10, 20, 30, sometimes 50 times what they were earning when they first heard that simple, powerful rule to read 1 hour per day and to take careful notes in your chosen field. 1 hour per day will translate into as much as a book a week. A book a week will translate into as many as 50 books a year. 50 books a year will translate into as many as 500 books in 10 years. In a world where the average person reads less than one book a year, if you were to read 500 books in your field, making you better and more effective and more productive, do you think that would affect your income? Do you think it would affect your career? Do you think it would affect and change your whole life? You bet it would. So read 1 hour per day. Number two, read the business and trade publications that contain articles and stories relevant to your field. Subscribe to them all. Point number three for keeping up. And here is one of the most important pieces of advice that I've ever received. This piece of advice is worth the entire cost of this program. It's simply this. Invest 3% of your income into yourself. Spend 3% of what you earn on your own personal and professional development in terms of books, magazines, audio cassettes, video cassettes, and additional training and seminars. I will promise you this, that if you invest 3% of your income back in yourself, within a few years you will not have enough time in the year to spend the amount of money that 3% represents. 3% doesn't seem like a lot, but the impact it will have on the rest of your life can be so powerful that if you'll do it, you'll never, never regret it. Read Success Magazine, read Inc. Magazine, read Forbes Magazine, read Fortune Magazine, read Time and Newsweek, read Business Week. Read all the magazines that tell you what is going on in the world. Be alert and aware of what is going on in the world of business. In order to get through all these magazines, use the rip and read method. Save time by going to the table of contents, finding the articles that are of interest to you, and then go straight to the articles. Rip them out and place them in a file folder for reading during what is called transition time. I always carry a folder that has a whole pile of articles from a bunch of different magazines, and I carry it in my briefcase. I read it when I'm traveling, I read it in airports, I read it on airplanes, I read it on holidays, and it's amazing how many publications you can keep current with by using the rip and read method. You have to resist the temptation to read a magazine or a newspaper from front to back, cover to cover. Remember that magazines and newspapers are written and designed to sell advertising. They want you to read from the first page to the last page, but you simply don't have enough time to do that. Remember, time is all you have to sell. Number four is use gifts of time, short periods while traveling or waiting to catch up with your file. Buy paperbacks and tear off a bunch of pages to carry with you each day. Many people have gone through entire piles of books by just simply taking a paperback, which costs you $4 or $5, tearing out 50 pages at a time and carrying them in your inside pocket or your purse or your briefcase, and whenever you have to wait, whenever you have to sit, pull it out and read it. The end of the day, put it back with the other pages and tear off some more pages. It's amazing how many books you can go through, how many articles, how many magazines, if you use every spare minute to read. Number five is read books written by experts in their field, books that contain practical information that you can use to improve the quality of your work and your life immediately. The key is, before you buy a book, examine what the author has done or accomplished. What you want to do is you want to buy books written by people who have successful track records. Try to avoid books written by theorists or academics or university professors who do not have experience in the real world. Some of them are full of ideas that are completely impractical, and the authors themselves don't realize that the ideas are impractical because they've never had a chance to see them tested in the real world. Read book reviews in magazines or wait until they come out in paperback. One of the rules of buying books is that if a book gets into paperback, it's usually because it has sold well in hardcover. So almost any book that is in paperback has already had the stamp of approval of the marketplace on it. Sometimes people ask me, what books should I buy and where should I buy them? I just say, go to a bookstore and look at any of the books that are in paperback because they already have that stamp of approval. When you read a book, get a red pen or a colored pen and underline and make notes in the book. Personalize the book yourself and have the notes typed up for review and sometimes even for distribution. Many people will read a book, turn the book over to their secretary, have the secretary type up all the parts that have been underlined, and then distribute that synopsis, reread the high points at their leisure. It's one way to be able to get the very most out of a book that's got lots of powerful information. Here's a sixth way for you to keep up with what's going on, and that is to join book clubs in your field and keep current with the best that's being written on a month-to-month basis. The book clubs are very selective because they depend entirely for their income on choosing books that you will buy and keep. So they read an enormous number of books before they select individual books to recommend to you. There are three that I would recommend. One is called the Executive Book Club, the other is the Fortune Book Club, and the third is the Quality Paperback Book Club. The Executive Book Club is advertised in a variety of different places. The Fortune Book Club is, of course, advertised in Fortune magazine, and the Quality Paperback Book Club is advertised in a series of publications. By all means, send in and join those book clubs, get their initial volumes, and keep current with what's going on. Number seven is subscribe to book condensations, both written and on audio tape. And there are three very successful organizations that do this. One is called Soundview Executive Book Summaries. And what they do is they send out two book summaries on either side of an audio cassette each month. Another is called Macmillan Executive Summary Program, where they send out a synopsis of a book, 6 pages of information, culling out the key ideas in a series of business books every month. And another is called Fast Track Audio Tape Summaries. Again, these clubs are all advertised in almost all the business magazines, so keep your eyes open and send away for them. They can save you hours and hours of reading, give you the high points and the key ideas that you can use immediately in the various subjects in the books that they review. Now, an eighth thing that you can do to keep up is to take a speed reading course to increase the amount that you can absorb. You can actually triple your speed in the first lesson or the first class of a good speed reading course. The very best speed reading course in America is, and always has been, in my opinion, the Evelyn Wood speed reading system. I took it many years ago, and they said that they would triple my reading speed in the first three-hour class, and I couldn't believe that, but they actually did, with no loss of retention, no loss of memory at all. It's a powerful method, and what you can do with a speed reading course is you can go through so much more information. I, for instance, read about three newspapers a day. I subscribe to 30 or 40 magazines. I subscribe to a dozen newsletters. I subscribe to a series of other publications, and I go through piles and piles of correspondence. And I can do this because I can read comfortably at between 800 and 1,000 words a minute of technical material, business material, sales material, and other things. And I strongly recommend speed reading. The ninth suggestion I would have for you on keeping up is learn how to read a book efficiently. And one of the best methods is what is called the OPIR system, O-P-I-R, which stands for Overview, Preview, In-View, and Review. What you do with the OPIR system is you pick up a book, and instead of just opening it up and reading it from front to back the way you normally would, you read for purpose, or you read what is called on purpose. In other words, you aim to find out what the book is about, and then as you read, you look to fill in the gaps in your knowledge. So the first O, overview, requires that you look at the front cover, the back cover. You look at the inside jackets, you read the table of contents, and you just flip through the pages quickly to get a feel for the way the book is structured, what the chapter headings are, what the material is, and how the material flows. Second is a preview. In the preview, what you do is you flip through the pages one at a time or two at a time quickly to get an even better feeling for how the book is laid out and for the information that it contains. In the preview, you'll stop and you'll read an occasional sentence or an occasional part paragraph to get a feeling for how the book is developing. In the in-view, you sit down and using your hand, you read quickly from page to page to fill in the gaps in your knowledge. And in the review, you go back over and you read through the parts that are most important. The interesting thing about this method, if you do it properly, is that you will increase your retention, you'll remember far more, and you'll dramatically reduce the time it takes you to read a book. Remember, the faster you read a book, the more information you get. In other words, the faster you read, the more you retain. Again, it's another reason for taking a speed reading course. The tenth thing you can do to keep up is cancel useless subscriptions. Ask yourself, is this publication helping me to achieve my goals? Remember, you simply do not have time to read it all. And if a publication is not helping you achieve your goals, or if it's not serving some important part of your life, cancel the subscription. Get rid of it, because you just simply don't have the time. Now, an 11th thing that you can do, listen to audio cassettes in your car. Audio cassette listening has been called the greatest breakthrough in education since the invention of the printing press. With audio cassette listening, you can become one of the best educated people in America. Never have your automobile moving without audio cassettes playing. The average person who owns a car in America drives between 12,000 and 25,000 miles per annum, according to the American Automobile Association. This translates into 500 to 1,000 hours per year that you spend behind the wheel of your car. That is the equivalent of 12.5 to 25 40-hour weeks, or 3 to 6 months of 40-hour weeks. Now imagine if your boss came to you and said, I'm going to give you 3 to 6 months off each year in order to engage in personal and professional development activities. Imagine if your boss would pay you to take 3 to 6 months off a year in order to learn how to become more effective and more efficient. You can have exactly the same equivalent of that just by listening to audio cassettes in your car as you drive from place to place. 3 to 6 months is the equivalent of 1 to 2 university semesters. As I said, you can become one of the best educated people in America, or Canada, or Australia for that matter, simply by listening to audio cassettes as you drive around. And you cannot afford not to be listening to audio cassettes. Turn your car into a university on wheels. Number 12, attend seminars and courses given by people with practical experience and successful track records. In a seminar, you get tremendously condensed information. For instance, when I do a full-day seminar, say 6 or 7 hours, I will spend at least 1,000 hours of reading, study, research, consulting, and practice to get the information that I'll put into a 6 or 7 hour seminar. I'll probably read 100 books, and all that I'll put into that seminar in that 6 or 7 hours is what I consider to be the very richest, the very most valuable and most important things that I've learned that can be immediately applied to get results. So by all means, go to seminars. Take every seminar with every expert that you can possibly find. Number 13 is join professional associations. Join your professional or trade association. Join the association that represents your business or industry. Join the Chamber of Commerce and attend regularly. These associations are meant as self-help groups. You'll meet more people who can help you at these organizations than you can imagine. When you go and when you attend these meetings, get involved, offer to help, serve on a committee, do something, get involved. I have found the most successful people in every profession are the people who are the most actively involved in their professional association. I've also found that many of the least successful people in any profession are people who never have anything to do with a professional or trade association. So serve on a committee, do a good job, bring yourself to the attention of other people, put something back into your trade or profession. Number 14 is networking. Get around people who can help you. In every bit of research that's coming out today, the conclusion is that those who network the most are the most successful in every field. Your success in life is always determined by the quality and the quantity of people who know you in a positive or favorable light. The more people you know and who know you, the more successful you're going to be, holding constant for everything else, because people like to deal with people that they know. So when you network, join organizations and think of people who could help you and think of things that you could do for them. The key to networking is what is called the law of reciprocity. Always be looking for ways to help or to do favors for people who could be helpful to you sometime in the future. Successful managers who get promoted rapidly, in a recent survey, were found to be spending as much as 54% of their time networking within their business and industry and outside their business and industry. They were known to more people and more doors were opened up to them as a result. Here's a very simple formula that can save you an enormous amount of time in your career, and it's simply this: T times R equals P, where T stands for talents, your talents and abilities and skills and knowledge and experience, times R, which stands for relationships, the number of people you know and the number of people you can affect or influence, and P stands for productivity. Productivity is the amount and the value of what you produce and get paid for. T times R equals P. Now, the key to success in the world of work is to get to know and to be known by the greatest number of people. If necessary, take a course in public speaking. One person who knows you in a favorable light in a particular situation might save you 5 years of hard work in your career. Remember, the more people you know and who know you, the more successful you'll be. So get out and get among them. Arise 1 hour early each morning and invest that time in yourself. Henry Ward Beecher once said, "The first hour is the rudder of the day." One of the most important pieces of advice I ever got was to get up 2 hours before my first appointment and invest the first hour in my mind, reading something educational and uplifting and inspirational, planning the day, writing and rewriting your goals. Invest the first hour of the day in yourself and you'll be astonished at the impact it has on the rest of your day. We call this the golden hour, and it sets the tone for the entire day. 1 hour each morning will make you an expert. 1 hour each morning reading in your chosen subject, educating yourself, uplifting yourself, motivating, inspiring yourself will change the whole tone of the rest of the day. Now here's three final keys to success with regard to keeping up. Number one, plan every day in advance. Start off with a written plan with clear goals and objectives and priorities. Number two, listen to audio cassettes in your car. Always have your audio cassette player going. And number three, commit yourself to lifelong personal and professional development. Reading, learning, listening, and growing can save you years and years of hard work. As we said earlier, sometimes one piece of information will change the whole direction of your career and save you years and years of effort. There is nothing you cannot do if you are willing to prepare yourself long enough and hard enough in advance. The decision to keep up and keep ahead of what is going on in your field as much as any other decision you make will assure that you reach your full potential and become everything that you are capable of becoming. There is nothing that you cannot do if you are willing to prepare yourself in advance. Your interactions with others consume as much, if not more, time than any other part of your day. Even technical workers spend up to 75% of their time communicating with coworkers. and you can greatly increase your effectiveness and your time efficiency by improving the quality of your communications. Some of the biggest time wasters in life are, 1, misunderstandings in relationships, leading to anger, frustration, unhappiness, and requiring an enormous amount of time to clear up and get back to normal, if ever. Remember, most of your problems in life talk back. Perhaps 85% of your happiness or unhappiness in life involves other people, and miscommunications with other people is a major source of time wastage. 2, misunderstandings at work, leading to your working at the wrong job at the wrong time, for the wrong reason, perhaps at the wrong level of quality, and often for the wrong person. Some of the most stressful times of our lives revolve around misunderstandings at work, especially miscommunications with our boss. The 1 complaint of employees is not knowing what's expected, being kept in the dark. The 3rd biggest time waster is poor delegation. Poor delegation to others or from others, leading to mistakes and frustration on the part of both the boss and the employee. It's generally assumed that everybody does the very best they can with what they have, but poor delegation often causes even the most sincere and talented people to do poor work and to be frustrated and unhappy. A 4th time waster is unclear lines of authority and responsibility, which is not knowing who's supposed to do what and by when and to what standard of quality. A question that I often ask in my management seminars is, how many of your employees know exactly why they're on the payroll, exactly what they're expected to do, and in what order of priority? And most managers will admit that most of their people don't know those things. 5, poor or incomplete information, leading to erroneous assumptions and conclusions. It's amazing how often we jump to conclusions or make false assumptions because we are working on incomplete information. A 6th time waster in working with others is aimless meetings, proceeding without an agenda, without direction, or without closure. Meetings that start and stop with no particular resolution, with no specific assigned responsibilities, and with no deadlines. A 7th time waster in working with others is lack of or unclear communications on important matters affecting a person's work or personal life, which is defined as not knowing what's going on. In fact, 2 of the biggest motivators in the world of work are being in the know, being fully informed about what's going on in the company, and knowing clearly what's expected of a person. 84% of chief executive officers agree that your ability to communicate effectively at work is the key skill of success. Almost all successful men and women today in the world of work, politics, business, and other organizations are there because of their ability to communicate effectively with others. The reason we're talking about working with others is because effective communication is a key time management skill, especially with regard to setting goals and objectives and delegation of tasks and responsibilities. Now, here's a good rule. Never assume that the other person understands until he or she has fed it back to you in his or her own words. And never assume that you understand until you've fed it back or explained it in your own words. In fact, it is a truism that we only understand something to the degree to which we can explain it to another person. And here's another rule. In interacting with others, seek first to understand, then to be understood. Most people get this rule backwards. They're so busy trying to get other people to understand them that they never take the time to understand the other. So seek first to understand. Strive to understand and to listen to what the other person is saying, and then take the time to have the other person understand you. There's a law that was developed by David Ricardo almost 200 years ago called the Law of Comparative Advantage, which is a terribly important idea for the modern employee. It simply says this: you should assign, delegate, or have someone else do any job that can be done at a wage less than you earn or that you desire to earn. Let me explain that. If your goal is to earn $30,000 a year, that works out to approximately $15 per hour. It means that you should hire someone to do anything that pays less than $15 an hour so that you can spend more time doing $15 an hour work. If you want to earn $100,000 per annum, it means that you want to earn $50 per hour. You can't earn $50 per hour if you're getting your car washed, picking up your groceries, or dropping off your dry cleaning, for the simple reason that that kind of work doesn't pay $50 an hour. The basic rule is this: If you want to earn $50 an hour, you have to do $50 an hour work for 7 or 8 hours every single working day. And if you do not do $50 an hour work, in the final analysis, you won't end up earning the money. This rule applies to hiring a bookkeeper, typing, shopping, house cleaning, car washing, anything. The key to effective delegation in your life, whether you're a boss or an employee, is to be continually looking for ways to outsource, to delegate, or to do things that pay a lower hourly rate than you desire to earn. It's the only way that you'll have enough time to concentrate on doing the kind of work that will pay you the kind of money that you're worth. So here are some things to ask with regard to delegating and outsourcing and hiring other people to do parts of your work so you can do the parts of the work that pay the most. First of all, who can do the job instead of you? Remember, you have to delegate everything possible in order to have enough time to do just the things that are most important. Second is, who can do the job better than you? One of the characteristics of effective managers and effective leaders is they have the ability to find people who are superior to them in specific ways. Number three, who can do the job at less expense than you? Many companies are finding that they can outsource major parts of their operations to companies who specialize in that area, and these companies on the outside can actually do the job cheaper than they can on the inside. Number four, can the activity be eliminated altogether? What would happen if the job wasn't done at all? And number five, can the time you spend doing this task be reduced? Remember, the only way that you can maximize the value of your return on time spent working with others is to be continually thinking of how you can apply it to a higher and better use. So here are seven ways to get more done. Number one, you can work harder with a greater concentration of personal power. You can work more intensely. You can focus on your work and work with less interruption, less diversion, less distraction. You can work hard, 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 which is a secret to success. Number two, you can work faster. You can pick up the pace. As we've talked about before, you can develop a faster tempo. Some people who work hard and work fast get more done in a single day than many people get done in a week. Number three, you can batch your tasks. You can do a series of similar jobs together, thereby taking advantage of the learning curve. Number four, you can do more important things. You can work on higher value tasks. You can work on things that have a higher potential payoff rather than things that have a low payoff. Number five, you can do things that you're better at. You'll probably do these things in a higher quality fashion, and they'll probably be easier for you, so you get more of them done in the same period of time. Number six, you can make fewer mistakes. You can take the time to do it right the first time. Someone once said that there's never enough time to do it right, but there's always enough time to do it over. One of the great time management techniques is to do it right the first time. And number seven, you can simplify the work by reducing the steps, eliminating steps, or consolidating steps so that the job is much simpler and easier to get done. Now, the key to effective communication in working with others is clarity. And clarity requires time, attention, and patience. Someone once said that life is the study of attention, that you always pay attention to that which you most value. And all leaders are good listeners. They pay close attention to others. They pay close attention to details. They pay close attention to everything that is going on because they value it and it's important to them. Now, to delegate effectively in working with others, there are six steps.
Step number one,
to match the person to the job. One of the greatest wastes of time in the world of work is delegating the task to the wrong person, delegating the task to the person who is not capable of doing it properly or in a time-effective way.
Step number two,
once you've picked the right person, discuss with that person and agree upon what must be done. Agree upon the end result or the objective so that both of you are perfectly clear on what you're trying to accomplish. Step three is to explain to the person your preferred method of working. This is how you would like to see the job done. Step four is to ask him or her to feed it back to you in his or her own words. Have them feed it back and paraphrase it so that you and the other person both know that you have clear understanding on the goal or objective.
Step number five,
set a deadline and arrange for periodic inspections.
Step number six,
manage by exception whenever possible. Management by exception is a powerful time management tool in working with others. What it means is this, is if the job is on track and on schedule, the person doesn't have to report back to you. The person only has to report back to you when an exception occurs and the job is not being done as per the agreed schedule or the agreed standard. And with your boss, you also have to have clarity. One of the greatest reasons for frustration, unhappiness, and time wastage in the world of work is that we are not clear about exactly what it is our boss wants and needs and expects of us and in what priority. So you have to ask your boss what is to be done and in what order of priority. One of the best techniques to achieve this is to make a list of everything that you feel that you're on the payroll to accomplish and take it to your boss and ask your boss to organize the list in order of priority. What does he or she consider to be the most important thing, the second most important thing, the third most important thing? Often this is a very revealing exercise, but let me point out one thing. It is only when you're working on what is most important to your boss that you can possibly have any chance of satisfying or pleasing your boss or being promoted or being paid more money. If you do everything on the list in an excellent fashion, but you do not do the things that are most important to your boss, for that very reason alone, it will interfere with your career. Now, there are three types of decisions in any organization. The three types of decisions are command decisions, consultative decisions, and consensus decisions. A command decision is a decision that has to be made by the boss or by the person in charge. This person is solely responsible for making up his or her mind about what is to be done. A consultative decision is a decision where the boss asks for advice and takes input from other people and then makes the decision. A consensus decision is a democratic decision. It's a decision where everybody gets involved and the decision is made by consensus. In other words, everybody mutually agrees on what we're going to do. One of the great problems in communications in working with others is confusion over which kind of a decision is being made. If people think it's a consensus decision and the boss feels it's a command or a consultative decision that he or she is going to make in the privacy of their own office or their own room, then there's going to be frustration and unhappiness. If, on the other hand, people think it's a command decision, in reality it is a consensus decision and the group is responsible for the decision, you're going to have a breakdown in communication and time wastage straightening it out. So it's very important to say at the beginning what kind of a decision this is. If the boss says this is a consensus decision, he says that you can decide this and whatever the group decides, that's what I'll go along with, and make it clear. Now, problem solving and working with others requires clarity, and problem solving is a key time management skill that you can learn. There are several steps to problem solving. I'll just talk about six of them right now. Number one, what exactly is the problem? Define the problem clearly and, if possible, in writing. Remember, accurate diagnosis is half the cure. Sometimes writing the problem down on a flip chart or on a bulletin board and having everybody agree that, yes, that's the definition of the problem leads rapidly to a solution. Another technique you can use is to ask, what else is the problem? And what else in addition to that? Sometimes a problem is a cluster problem, where what appears to be a large problem is really two or three smaller problems that need to be broken out and defined separately. Now, the second step is to ask, how did it happen? What are all of the possible causes of this problem? What are the reasons for the problem? In other words, it is not enough to come up with a solution. It's important that one deals with the underlying causes that have triggered the problem in the first place. Number three, ask, what are all the possible solutions? In other words, what are all the possible things that we could do to solve this problem? And this is a very important part of problem solving. Rather than leaping to the conclusion that there's only one answer, what you do is you write down as many different things that you can do to solve the problem and then select the very best decision. Number four is ask, which is the best solution? And why is it the best solution? Why is it superior to the others? Number five is to ask, what is our alternative solution? In other words, once you've decided on what the best solution is, ask yourself, if this solution doesn't work out, what would be our plan B? What would be our fallback option? What would we use as an alternative or a second solution? Thinking through an alternative solution is a very powerful mental exercise. And number six, before you implement the solution, ask, what is the worst possible outcome of this solution? In other words, what's the worst possible thing that can happen if we go ahead with this solution or if we remain with this problem. Sometimes when you ask that question, you realize that the worst possible outcome may be too unpleasant to allow, and maybe the second alternative is better because the worst possible consequences of that solution are not as bad. This brings us to what is called the focus on contribution. The focus on contribution in an organization is the key to good communications and good teamwork. Good human relations come about when relationships are task-focused and aimed at achieving specific goals or solving specific problems. If relationships in the world of work are not task-focused, they have a tendency to become people-focused. Instead of becoming objective and measurable, they become subjective and personal, and lead to all kinds of problems which lead to enormous losses of time. Participative management is a popular way of involving everybody in the decision-making process. However, participative management can lead to reverse delegation, and you have to be alert to this. Reverse delegation means that the job gets handed back up the chain of command to the boss rather than being handed down from the boss to the subordinate. You must resist upward or reverse delegation, and you must be aware that employees are always trying to delegate the job back to you. One of the ways that they delegate it back to you is they bring you a problem and they say, "I don't know what to do in this situation," or "Can you call this person for me?" or "Can you get this information that I need?" And what happens is one by one they bring parts of their jobs back to you. You have to insist that they take it away with them. Avoid the tendency in working to go from managing to operating, which is falling back into your comfort zone. Most managers become managers because they're very good at lower level positions. When they get under stress or when they get overwhelmed with work, they have a tendency to stop managing, which means getting the job done through others, and start operating, which means going back and doing the job themselves. They start saying, "Well, if I want it done right, I have to do it myself." But in reality, a good manager is a person who makes sure that other people get it done right rather than going back and doing it themselves. 51% of the time of sales managers, for instance, is spent in non-management activities. That if sales managers would just spend their time in management, they could double their productivity and their effectiveness. So push on others everything that can possibly be done by them. This is one of the keys to working with others, is to delegate and outsource everything. Take the time to train and to teach subordinates and others in order to build their competence so that you can delegate even more. Teaching other people how to do a job is a very high payoff investment of time, because once you've taught somebody else how to do part of your work, you can always delegate it and free yourself for other work. The major problem and time waster in communications and in working with others is fuzzy understanding. The antidote to fuzzy understanding, and one of the greatest time management tools of all, is clarity, clarity, clarity. And clarity is achieved through repetition, discussion, feedback, and agreement. So take the time to learn how to be a good communicator. It will pay off in tremendous time savings, and it will pay off in every area of your life and work.